This week's show with designer Orna Willis is sponsored by CyberPointers, the only online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. Membership is open to all members of the National ANG organization, and meetings are conducted every other month and run completely online via an email groups program. CyberPointers provides stitching opportunities through meeting programs, ANG correspondence courses, and workshops that may not otherwise be available to our members. They have an instructor-led program every meeting. Upcoming meeting programs include Design Your Own Scissors Case by Carol Higginbotham, led by chapter member Joanne Jackson, Corners and Curves by Lorene Salt, led by chapter member Terry Sanders, and Dia Variations by Kate Festo, in which you'll learn rosashi on traditional Japanese silk gauze. Registrations are open for the following workshops: Mermaid's Tale by Debbie Raleigh, in which a mermaid disappears into clear tropical water with just a splash of tail to reveal her story. The Mermaid's Tale features levels of water painted on a canvas defined with several small stitches with painter's threads. Various overdyed threads and sparkling sequins are used to enhance the design. Persian Chair by Anne Marie Anderson Mays of Beautiful Stitches is a miniature chair worked in a variety of stitches with overdyed threads. Finishing of the chair is included in the workshop. Rescent, short for Rose Crescent Angel, is a design by Curdy Biggs and a study of crescent stitches on rose gold painted canvas. Rescent will be brought to life using variations of the crescent stitch, along with Jessica's plaited ray and sparkling beads. Be sure to check out the CyberPointers website at cyberpointers.org for all of their exciting current and future offerings. Thanks to CyberPointers for their support. And now, on to our conversation with Orna Willis. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, visit number four, Orna Willis. Orna, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Visit number four, huh?
Yep. I looked it up.
Wonderful.
December of 2020, so we're on a two-year cycle, if that is any pattern. I don't know.
I'm marking my calendar for 2024.
Now, let's do one before then.
Yes.
If you want Orna's background and all the things, there's three previous ones, and we cover all that, so we're not going to do that today. Orna Willis, probably one of the best counted canvas designers in the business. Really beautiful stuff. Yep. Go to adornbyorna.com is the site if you want to just drool over beautiful designs and colors and threads and, yeah, all of that.
Yeah. Definitely drooling.
It'll cost you money, though. I'm warning people. It'll cost you money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Versus all the other needlepoint that comes for free, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 Orna charges. Everyone else is free.
Yeah. I always have way too much fun with you guys.
All right. So we want to start out this gauge design that you introduced a month ago, 2 months ago?
It's probably been 2 months, yeah.
Yeah. Give us the background on that, because it's a beautiful design, but there's a whole lot more to it than just another design.
Yes, there is. So this story goes back quite a few years now. I want to say maybe 3-4 years. And it started when I was kitting for a new design. And one of my favorite threads to use is from The Thread Gatherer. There are fabulous hand-dyed silks from Cecilia Strickland, who is the owner designer behind that company. And I called her to ask about some threads I was waiting for. And make a long story short, we kind of started chatting, and she was telling me that she and her family were going through a very difficult time. And then she started telling me about Gage. Gage, her son, who was, I want to say, 39 years old, had gone through some very, very tough times, particularly a few last years. And he took his own life not very long before this conversation that we had. And I think that all of us, I know that certainly my family, has been touched by mental illness. Or, you know, many people, it turns out, have also been touched by suicide. So we had this conversation, which was so moving. And she told me about Gage, and told me a bit about what happened and about how they were coping and about the rest of her family. And we ended the conversation. But, you know, it's the kind of conversation that kind of really sticks with you. It stays in your heart.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another in my mind. And I thought, I would love to find a way to honor Gage and to bring this whole plague, in a way, of suicide to the forefront, to talk about it. And the way I can do that is by needlepoint. That's my tool. And I was thinking about how this young man grew up around all this beauty that his mother makes with these threads. Their business is in the home. And I know that her two daughters work in it. Her husband helps out. It's a family business. And I'm sure that he too was surrounded by this gorgeous abundance of color and thread. And so I thought, I would like to design a piece using Cecilia's threads only in honor of Gage. And then I thought, well, it's nice that you came up with this idea, but I'm not sure that it would be something the family would want. And so I made a call and talked to Cecilia about it. And she was so moved and so thankful, as was her entire family. And that's when this project started moving along. That was sort of the day that we decided we're going for it. So that, you know, up to there, it was almost the easy part in a way, because after I had talked to her and got the okay, I kind of sat there with myself for a moment and thought, oh my God, how in the world do I design something that is, you know, that is up to the task? How do I really honor him? How do I approach this subject? How do I make sure that the family is happy with what I do? That I felt this huge responsibility, and I wasn't quite sure how I go about it. And here it's maybe important to just say that this was the first time that I added this other element to my design process, and that is to design with something beyond just the aesthetics, just designing for the beauty of it. I had a mission here, and it was a huge responsibility, and I couldn't figure out, it took me a long time, I couldn't figure out how I approach this.
Yeah, that was, when you first showed that, that was one of the first thoughts that went through my mind, because mental illness, you know, it's so good that it is coming to the forefront and is being talked about. You know, I saw the other day, I was monkeying around on YouTube and saw a clip of Robin Williams, and you would never know that he was in such straits that he would take his own life. And you know, it's an awareness thing. And when I first saw that and caught the little clip of the story, I thought, oh, Orna, you really dove into the deep end here. I wonder what that's like.
Extremely scary. Extremely yeah. scary. I had a lot of thoughts. So I did say, okay, what is going to help me is the use of these threads. Threads that came from Gage's home and from his mom and family. That helped me. But as you know, most of the work I do, I want to say 95% of it, is counted thread and is geometric. And so I wasn't about to do something that had imagery to it. It's not what I do. It's not what I feel I could do well enough. So how do you really approach this and make some sort of statement here? I had all sorts of ideas, and I was talking a lot with people around me. My daughter helped me a lot. And finally, I decided that what I want to do is enter one element into this entire design that says something. So within this entire design, the design is made of 33 different little sections that come together sort of like a crazy quilt almost. And one of them has a semicolon, which is the symbol of suicide prevention. And I designed that. I used colors that it's a sort of like a blue turquoise and a purple. Those are the two colors that usually go with the symbol. And I put that into the design. Everything else that I did was to try to kind of symbolize elements of what Cecilia had told me about Gage. So he loved being outdoors. He loved gardening. He loved the kitchen. You know, there were all sorts of things that he, that filled his life. And in sort of symbolic ways, I incorporated it. Now, looking at it, if you don't know, it's not obvious. There's nothing there that takes you right to this subject. But if you know, and if you take the time to learn about Gage, then you can find it there. And I started designing. It was a very emotional process. At some point, I started sending little photos to the family to see what they were thinking. And they were so, so appreciative and loved what was happening. And one of the things that happened over the time is that Celia and I became very, very close. There's, you know, a friendship that was born here that was also a huge gift for me. And I'm hoping for her too. She's an amazing woman. And the other thing that happened over time, and I think this is maybe the greatest gift, is that, you know, I put out the design and there will be a class, and I have, you know, almost 100 signups. And I got to tell you guys that I want to say 90% of the people that wrote me to sign up also wrote about how mental illness or suicide touched their lives. Mm. It was so moving to read. I mean, in some cases, it's children, spouses, people that are very close. Some people actually even know Cecilia and kind of, you know Gage, and they came from that direction. So this is really one of the most emotional designs, the whole process for me, and I hope that for Cecilia's family as well.
And just so that people know, all the published things suggest that the deadline to participate in this Silver Needle Society class that Orna is doing with Gage suggests that the deadline has passed, but there are still a number of kits, 15 or so kits available. So if you want to participate, get in touch with Orna through her website by the 16th, and you can get a kit and be part of this class that starts February 1. So just so people know, we're not talking about something that is not approachable. You very much can still get involved if you want in this thing. So Orna, so this process then sounds to me like almost like an actor taking on a role, where you kind of had to immerse yourself to really bring out how you would do this design.
That's a great example, except I guess I would say an actor that doesn't have a script. It was something that that, you know, everything was done for the first time and had to be done with so much sensitivity in every aspect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's a beautiful image that you bring.
So I have a question. So did Cecilia's family, did they help you pick the colors, or did they just send you their thread pack and say, here you go? How did that come about?
Actually, I went online. First of all, I carry a lot of their threads because I design with her threads a lot. But I went online and picked, you know, quite a wide array of colors and in different types of silks. And Cecilia sent them to me, and I probably, well, let me tell you, there are 39 different silks in this piece. So of everything that
she sent. Way to hold back,
sent,
Orna. Way to hold back.
Yeah. I did. I did. My goodness. I tried. You know, what you say, I have to tell you a little something. I have been doing a lot of classes, a lot of Zoom classes, and many of them through Shining Needle Society. I'm just so thankful to Kate Gaunt and the way she has built this this kind of school that we can participate in. So in one of the classes, we had a Zoom session, and I said, you know, guys, I want to ask you, I sometimes struggle when I'm choosing threads because I have to take into account the cost of the kit, right? And so would you prefer that I give you smaller amounts of a thread if it's only partially used? Let's say it's, you know, 10 yards and I only use 1 yard. Would you prefer that I cut pieces so that I lower the price? And I didn't finish the sentence, and everybody said, no, 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 we want for our stash. No, do right. not do that.
Right. Yes.
So that was, that was in terms of holding back. Yeah, I got my okay from that.
Well, and I think the reason is it's fun. When you get I have several of your designs, and if you haven't used a lot of different threads, you get these threads that you've never tried before. You get to use them once and play with them. And then you're like, well, now I have this thread. I can use it somewhere else. I've used it once. I know what it does. You kind of take the fear out of using some of those threads, I think. So, yeah, I want the whole skein. I want the whole batch.
Yes, that's true. And in this case, there are pearls and there are stranded in the silks. But the color combinations that they have in each skein are just amazing. And I try to use these combinations, like you said, in ways that you would not usually use them. The way I seat the different colors side by side, I think opens up, you know, a whole new world of what you could actually do with these different thread colors, I'm hoping. Yes. And if you, I'm sure we'll have a picture of the design. Yeah. And I think it'll be pretty obvious when you see that some of the combinations are crazy. And yet, to me, they work.
It seemed to me when you look at this thing that when you start to design, you really start at a fork in the road, because given the background and the reason you're doing this, you have to make a decision. Do I go somber colors? Do I do bright, my usual bright and cheery? Seemed to me like that was really an upfront decision you had to make, or am I wrong?
That's so true. So true. And I'll tell you what my point of view was. My point of view was to celebrate Gage's life. Now, we're talking about the end of his life, too. But he is not only what happened at the end. He is mostly what happened throughout. And that's the part that I wanted to address. In my way. And so I did not want it to be somber. I didn't want, as much as we're talking about death, I didn't want that to be the story that I'm telling. That is the end, but there's this huge story before. Mm-hmm. And it's a very complex, full, stimulating story, and that's what I tried to do in the design.
Yeah, okay. All right, so but I have a sense that this project took you through a whole series of emotions and decisions you don't normally make when designing.
No, I've never made them. No.
Okay.
Yeah. They're huge, you know. It's something that I always have to be happy with what I do. But here, it really had to live up to something, and it had to take into account all these people that are involved. So, no, I've never had to think about these things. And you know where I think I might have a problem is approaching my next design and going back to design that mostly deals with aesthetics, mm-hmm. and not anything beyond that. I feel like there's going to be this whole element that I will miss in a way. It's sort of a purpose, right?
Right. Well, see, and I wondered about that too. Does this now put you... doing a project like this, does this put you on another design path that opens doors to explore that have never been in your head before? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would. I don't think I would dare go on this path unless something kind of came to me, fell into my lap. Such as the story of Gage. No, I don't think I would be able now to say, okay, what other things are important to me in life? You know, mm-hmm. I don't know, the environment, or, you know, any type of thing like that would be a cause. I'm not sure I'm up for that challenge. I don't think so. I think I'm going to go back to I'm going to go back to stuff that's a little safer, less, yeah, at least take some time off. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a period of time where something like this, you have to kind of, and this isn't going to come out right, but kind of get out of your system or work through after the fact, and then you're going to come back in February and teach this class. So in many ways, revisit this whole thing. I'm sure there's some things that just need to get worked out. I'd be interested in a couple of years talking to you, see if you don't find yourself trying something else along these lines, not mental illness, but some other thing. It'd be interesting to see if you
work. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's something I haven't thought of, but yeah, you're right. There is a question there.
Yeah.
We'll see. I can certainly tell you that I told my husband, Reed, I said, okay, you know, in this process, especially in these past, I don't know, 3-4 years, I time things in a very orderly way. So I always have designs at different stages of the process. I will have a design that I just decide to start. I will have a design that I am kind of in towards the end of the stitching and designing. And then I have the part of the charting and writing instructions, and then the class. So at all times, all bases need to be loaded. You know, there needs to be something on each base in order for me to continually have something to offer once a class is done, to always have this. And I told Reed that after this piece, I'm stopping the process for a while and going to take a little break because I really feel I need it. I need to take the distance for a moment and enjoy this, teach it, and then move on. Yeah. And just speaking of the class, so last week, I believe, I spent a good hour chatting on Zoom. I recorded it with Cecilia about Gage, about the class, about the her business, and that will be a part of the class in February. It's about an hour long talk. I don't interview as well as you do, but I tried my hand at it, and it's really a beautiful conversation because Cecilia is an amazing woman. Really, really amazing woman. And if you do decide to join the class, I think you'll really enjoy this talk as well.
Yeah, it's such a neat thing because there's so much, it's unfortunate that it has to be, that the topic has to be suicide and mental illness. But in terms of needlework, so much more depth to it than we normally deal with. And to hear that so many people participating have been affected by this, and so you've given them something that I'm sure helps in all manner of ways is very neat. Yeah.
Oh, and I did forget to mention what's very important is that a part of all the proceeds will go to a few charities that we have identified with Cecilia. That deal with helping families that have been touched by suicide, helping the prevention centers, the call centers that give support to people going through these difficult times. So there's a range of things that we will be donating. And when I say we, it's myself, Cecilia, and Kate Gaunt from the Shining Needle Society. So that's another, you know, it's another part of this that makes me feel like we've done a good thing. It's good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, some of us forget that this is a, during this holiday season, it's a difficult time. You know, it's a difficult time for people who have lost people through suicide, people who are struggling with mental illness. This is because you're supposed to be, you know, there's all this, oh, be happy, you know, and they're like, well, I'm not happy. So there must be something wrong with me. And it, you know, maybe moves them further down that, side of depression. So it's good to point this out that, and that there's, we should be reaching out to people who are, we're going through this.
That's a great point. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the things that, you know, how you meet people and every once in a while, somebody will say something, a sentence to you, and for some reason, that sticks with you and that does something to you where you can keep going back and reiterating that sentence. And one of the things that Cecilia said to me in our first chat was she said, you know, people are afraid when they see me to talk about it. Sometimes I see people crossing the street or just, you know, coming across me and just not being able to say a word. And she says, what people need to understand is do not be afraid of talking about the person who is gone, because you're not going to remind me of him. I think about him every single day, all the time. So don't be afraid of that. If anything, it's something that makes me feel good to be able to say his name or to know that people are thinking about him as well. So, you know, if ever anybody listening kind of doesn't know how to react in this kind of a situation, what Cecilia is saying is talk about it with us. Don't be afraid. And that's really important.
Well, that's right. Good to hear, because I am exactly one of those people who would avoid it just because I would be deathly afraid I'd say the wrong thing and hurt a feeling or something. So I would just avoid. But so that's good to know that to not be afraid to address it is okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something that is much easier for the family to cope with than to see that somebody, you know, is struggling. And I understand that. I totally understand that, you know, when I'm talking to Cecilia or anybody else that has gone through a loss, I'm very careful and sometimes too careful, you know. But yeah, I think this is a great tip that she's giving us, that don't be afraid, talk.
Right. Right. And, yeah. And especially, and like I said, especially during this time of year, I'm running through my head through a couple of people I know that have lost people through suicide, and making an extra effort to reach out to them during the season. You know, I remember your family members, and, you know, we love you. We love them, you know, just to reach out to them, because I'm sure it's especially hard. You know, you're celebrating you know, this happy time and someone is missing, you know.
That's so true. And also after everything we've been through, the whole world in, you know, the past over 3 years, we know that mental illness is a problem more than ever. So, yeah, I think that coupled with the holiday season, and definitely there's always a need to talk if possible. Yeah.
Right. Right. Being a listening ear. And, and sometimes I think that's the nice thing about needlework. You get together and you're just head down and you're stitching, but all of a sudden those conversations come out. It's, you know, you get into that rhythm, you're stitching something and someone says, you know, and then they have they're able to open up and talk about things that are going on in their lives, you know, like the old quilting bee sort of thing. But
We do it with
stitching and trying to be aware of those around us who maybe are struggling. And reaching out to them if we can. So anyway.
Okay. Just to remind people that you can still get involved in the Shining Needle Society. I think I said silver before, Shining Needle Society, but get it in by the 16th for a February 1 start because Orna has to send stuff out, and so she needs time to make that happen. So do that. Talk about avoiding getting stuck in a rut. Now, I followed you for a long time. You know, all your designs, you definitely have a style, but mm-hmm. I don't see you getting stuck in a rut. Where it's just variations on the theme. I don't see that. Is that a conscious thing for you, or do you just do it because it's just natural that you just keep finding new variations and new things to do?
Well, first of all, you don't see it because I hide it.
Excellent. Well played.
When I feel that I just came up with something that really is stuck in the rut, I put it in my never-to-be-seen drawer. I have found that the way to, for me to avoid it, it sounds really simple, but it works, is do not let myself be bored. Mm. So as I'm designing, as I'm stitching, if I feel like, oh boy, done this before, not interesting, but you know, I started, I'll just finish it, whatever. I will not do that. The designing process for me is while I stitch, right? I have the canvas, I have the threads, I have the needle, and I design right onto the canvas. In fact, there is nothing drawn. There isn't even a very detailed image in my mind. It sort of is something that kind of grows right there in front of me. And so I can check every step of the way, am I still interested in doing what I'm doing? And I tend to be someone that needs to have change, that needs to have, you know, ooh, here's a new project. Like I really thrive in that kind of environment. So I can kind of know that if I say to myself, okay, the criteria is do not bore yourself, then I can make sure that I won't be stuck in a rut. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that someone who thrives in change, boy, that puts you in a real minority because most people resist it like the plague. So, but that's yeah, I can see how that is a huge personality plus for you.
In some ways, not in all, because my husband will tell you that. I always have to have a project. I always have to have something that I'm going to change in the house or this or that. And when he sees my eyes lighting up and I say, Reed, you know, I've been thinking, you can Uh-oh. See the blood like ooze out of his face. You can see this poor guy go, oh my God, what now? Are we building a new house? Are we adopting a child? Are we getting a dog? What does she have up her sleeve? So yeah, not everybody thinks that's a good thing.
Every time I talk, I'm with you, I'm convinced we need to do a show with your husband just because he could tell stories.
Yes.
Yes, he's a very great man. We will be celebrating our 30th year, and yep, he still seems to be happy about it.
Well, congratulations. It's great.
And talk about someone who's never been bored right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That is true. I promised him that he won't be bored, and he's not. So
that's a good thing.
Or good or bad. Yeah. So, yes, that's how I try to. I think you'll see that that there are, you know, periods that I go through. Where designs are symmetrical and I really get deep into that. And then I go through I will not do anything with symmetry in this piece. And I, you know, explore that in a few pieces. So you can kind of group, I think, my periods. That's the, right now I'm completing the non-symmetry whatsoever period.
Okay. Have you felt over the years that there's been an evolution in your work and your design? It's obviously grown, but are you aware of that, or is it just something that happens and if you look back you see it?
I am aware of that, and I strive for it, because I think that first of all, as a stitcher, I am learning more and more, and I'm using what I learn in my designs. I think I'm gaining more courage to try different things and to go out in different directions that I would not have dared do at the beginning. I'm also trying, and I don't know if I'm succeeding, but I'm really interested in exploring designs that will perhaps also speak to a younger stitching crowd. I know that I see a lot of these stitch clubs in cities all over the United States. In fact, I've seen them all over the world, where mostly younger people get together and regular basis and sit down together and stitch. And I kind of have these people in mind as I explore things that might be a little more modern, a little less rigid. And so, yeah, that also has been definitely evolution. Definitely. Yeah. You know, when I started designing, I was teaching myself how to stitch. I never had a grandmother who sat me down when I was 7 to, you know, to show me how to stitch. It's something I picked up when I was, 40 or something like that, and taught myself. And so it's definitely evolutionary. Yeah.
Wow, 40. So just like a couple of years ago then. Wow.
Yeah, right.
It's interesting that you use the word courage. Does that come from a comfort in that you are an established designer and artist, or where does that part come from?
I don't think so. Not from there, because I feel like every new design, I have to prove myself, and I have to prove myself worthy of the stitchers that may be interested in doing a piece of mine. You know, every design, you really start from scratch. Somebody sees it and says, yes, I like it. I would like to have that piece stitched by myself and up on my walls or not. And the fact that I did, you know, design before that was popular doesn't mean a thing. So I think it's more my ability to really, really understand what a thread can do, how to use the tools in the most interesting, innovative ways to try to come up with something that I have not seen before. And I have the courage to try that, but never a feeling of, oh yeah, I know they're going to like this. Never that. Mm. No. Mm-hmm. It's sort of more between myself and myself, you know?
Okay. Well,
yeah,
that's okay. That's a good place to work. No problem with that. Yep. Yeah. What, yeah. The young people, that's something that we've talked about in several shows, reaching the young people. And, you know, typically that's cross stitch because it's relatively inexpensive and simple to learn. How do you go about? I mean, some of your pieces on the surface, you know, just looking at them, can appear quite intimidating. They're not, but they can appear that way. How do you approach that with young people who might be a little hesitant?
I can't say that I have a that I have a solution for that, because you're right. In order to really get into stitching my designs or other designers that do, you know, geometrics and counted thread, you do have to develop a level of expertise or comfort, because the level of stitching is a little bit more complex, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a repetitive stitch throughout where you just change colors. And so you have to find the audience that is both young and interested in really delving into this as an art form. And so that's something that's hard. I was looking to start becoming a part of some of these stitch clubs. And then we got Corona introduced into our lives and kind of put that on hold. But I'm not sure I know how. Yeah. Has anybody on your show come up with a good solution?
No, I don't think there is a good solution. But I do know that I think we could all agree that the pandemic has sparked an interest in young people in doing needlework. And you know, my concern is that as the pandemic wanes, that we find a way to keep that going rather than let it fade into the woodwork and they go back to their phones and computer screens. Because there's, I mean, it's an important activity, hobby, art form, whatever you want to call it, that can be good for young people. And whether they're, you know, if it's just exposure at a young age and then later on in life they pick it up and go at it full bore, I don't know. But you know, so many people talk about learning needlework when they're young, and then they have a period of time where they're raising families and doing things, and then all of a sudden, one day the light goes back on, and they're stitching and thoroughly enjoying it, and without that exposure early on, would just never do it.
Very true. Yeah. It's definitely something I think about a lot. I can't say I totally understand what the younger stitcher, there's definitely many more young stitchers out there today, but I can't say I totally understand what they're kind of attracted to. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily the type of needlepoint that I do. I will say, however, that this year I was really very lucky to be asked to show my work at a few large art centers, art galleries in the area, where they, you know, looked at what I do as an art form and not necessarily as a craft that I'm teaching someone else to do, right?
Yeah.
And at the times when I was at the openings for these shows, I got a lot of interest and a lot of questions from a younger audience. And so I think that there is an interest in looking for some way to express yourself and really become proficient at some sort of technique. But I think that in itself, one thing that would really help is an organization that got behind this, to kind of put their resources and their weight behind it to really find a way to attract. It's hard as an individual artist to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And so many young people are on Instagram, but it's hard to find. There's a few needlepoint, but not a lot of counted needlepoint on Instagram. And that's where the young people deem to be gravitating is on Instagram versus Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't find a lot of counted designs out there. It's mainly painted canvas, which is beautiful and lovely. And it seems like a lot of the younger people are doing that, but it's not a lot of counted work, like what you do, which is counted.
Yes. So, right.
And how do you get that out there to people? Right.
Yeah. And it's definitely an investment. It's a mm-hmm. huge investment in time and in a learning curve. So I think it would be a crowd that is interested in really delving into this. I guess it would be, you know, the difference between taking a little class, you know, those classes which are really fun, where you go out with a bunch of girlfriends for an evening of wine and painting.
Yes.
And those are great. Those are fun. I've done them. I love that. Between that and deciding to take a 6-month, you know, serious course in painting at some sort of art school or whatever, it's sort of like that. When you want to do counted work, you kind of have to go to that direction of really taking this as something I need to learn. I need to right. spend the time to learn and become proficient in. Yeah.
Mm, right. But it adds so many hours of enjoyment. You know, once you start learning these techniques, you just can't stop. At least I can't, you know, it's so many hours, and I don't know. I'm hoping we can get more younger people involved to see the joy of it.
And, you know, we were talking about difficult times, mental illness, I guess depression or whatever. If it's something that speaks to you, working with your hands, then it's a great, great thing to have if you do suffer from. I mean, I think it's kept me relatively sane for years now.
Right. Me too.
Yeah, see there. So there you have it. Therapy with the needle.
Yeah, that's right.
Once again, I want to interview your husband. Yep. When you look back at your catalog, and it's pretty large, and look at back at the older designs, do you want to fix them? Do you want to say, you know, I really wish I'd done this way, or do you find yourself fairly satisfied with them as they are?
I don't think I want to fix them. And it's not that I'm satisfied. I see that some of them have a limitation in what I knew at the time, but I like them to be just as they are, because they are part of my personal process. Uh-huh. And I think that they still have enough to offer for someone who would like to stitch them. And I don't know that I would necessarily repeat any of that same type of design today, but they were there, and they were there for a purpose, and they led me on the journey. And I think those steps were very necessary. In fact, it's interesting that sometimes I look at them and I say to myself, why have I forgotten to do this?
Oh.
There's certain aspects of what I did that I can't quite grasp anymore. And I miss that. So I think I'm pleased with what I've done over time for when it was done. And I don't think there's anything that I say to myself, oh my God, how do I get that off the internet or whatever. So far.
Yeah. I just wonder that, because an evolution, yes. And at the time, you know, your first few designs, that's what you knew. It's what you could do. And you're obviously better at it now than you were then. But it's interesting. I'm good with that. Leave it where it was at that time. It worked and it did its job, and it's still valid. And because I think I'd have that Oh, geez, I really wish I hadn't done it that way. Let me go back and redo that thing, and drive myself nuts doing it. You know, just because I'd never be happy with anything. But it's just interesting that there's a comfort level there. That you, yeah, it is what it is, and I'm but you're always looking forward, moving forward rather than okay.
It's true. It's interesting that you say that. I think I kind of feel that also about my life. In fact, my youngest, Nina, was just asking me that, saying, Mom, is there anything you wish you hadn't done in your life? Any times that you regret and, you know, whatever. And I don't know if it's out of stupidity or what, but no, there aren't. And that's not to say that there were some challenging times. But I think, for instance, I probably told this to you, Gary, in a previous time that I was on your show. I was a single mother for many, many years, 12 years. And at the time, I was a sole provider, and I had to work with whatever I could put my hand. You know, I had jobs that were not what I wanted to be when I grow up. And whether they were office managers or whatever it was, at the time I was not happy. I had no choice. And then I opened my business and I marveled at the skills that I had learned in these various jobs that I did not like, but that I could put to beautiful use when I started a business. Mm. And that could be, you know, how do I organize an office? How do I file invoices? How, you know, all sorts of things that I was bored out of my mind doing at the time. And all of a sudden, they came to such use. Everything that happened, I don't want to sound like a guru or something, but I think that where we can help ourselves is to try to figure out how something good came out of that and what that could be.
Yeah, well, it's the journey thing. You know, it's cliched, but you know, it's the journey we go on, and we pick up things along the way that seem meaningless at the time, but prove valuable. I think we've all experienced that later mm-hmm. on in life. You go, boy, I'm glad I had that. I was at a conference here just a couple weeks ago, sitting next to a person from a PR agency who was kind of shepherding the press around. And she was working while we were listening to a lecture. And she's typing just this hunt and peck thing. And yeah. I thought, oh, how inefficient and horrible that is. And but she's fast at it, but she had no choice. And I think back to, you know, the high school where it was recommended, if you were in the college track, that you take a typing course. Hmm. Which was a whole different group of students. You know, we were really out of our element in terms of students you were with, but because we were in the college track, if you will, and other kids were in the heading to the factory track, if you will. I don't know how they figured it all out, but I took that course, and of course had no idea that we would live at keyboards. Hmm. Every day, you know, at least for me. And I've always been so glad that such a simple thing, a half year, that I did it, because it has paid off immensely. I had no idea I would ever sit at a keyboard. And it's those little things that pop up later that are valuable. And I mean, well, needlework, learning, you know, you didn't have it, but so many have learned from their mothers, and then it goes away, and they get to be 40, 50, 60 years old, and all of a sudden they're doing needlework, and it works out.
Yes. Yes, absolutely true. Yeah very true. Mm.
Yep. I don't know what all that means, but anyway, it's interesting. All right, we're going to run out of time here. So we've got the Gauge thing that people can sign up for. You're going to take a little break, but then I assume that more classes, more designs are on the horizon.
They are. Yeah. When I say little break, turns out I mean little break. Yeah. I will be traveling to Israel We're going to celebrate my mother's 90th birthday.
Oh, man.
And I get back, and I think by then my fingers will need to be touching a needle and thread. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's some new things that will be on the horizon, definitely. But yes, if anybody is interested in the Shiny Needle Society, you can write to me as well. There's a bunch of great classes there, and I do most of my teaching through there. So we announce a lot of new projects, or, you know, get on my mailing list. And I'd love to hear from anybody that's interested in taking Gage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put put links so people can sign up. And the only thing is you act quickly. 16th of December is where it needs to be if you want to get involved in the Gage class. It starts February 1, but as with all these things, there has to be some lead time for assembling kits and mailing things out and so on and so forth. So act quickly. We'll have the links there, or just contact Orna directly and she'll get you fixed up.
Perfect.
Always a treat, Orna. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks, Gary and Beth. It's been a pleasure as usual.
Oh, thank you.
And we won't wait 2 years next time.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks to everyone for listening.